Welcome to Live Experience Podcast. I'm your host, Joel Kleber. On today's episode, I've got an interview with Darcy Smythe, who is a business owner, and he's someone who studied psychology, but I've known Darcy for a long, long time. I did a call out for guests, and he was kind enough to jump on and share a story that happened to him and his family. I've got to give you a warning. It goes in some pretty heavy stuff, and if it does bring up any thoughts or anything like that, please make sure you use the relevant services. And a big thanks to Darcy for sharing his family's story. It is one that is very tough to hear, but in saying that, Darcy provides a lot of great insights and just a lot of really good advice for anyone who goes through this similar situation or has experienced it before. The insights he provides, I think, are really unique, and I thank him very much for his openness and for his time and for sharing his story as well and being proactive in reaching out. It means a lot. He's a great fella, and I really do hope you get a lot out of today's episode. Darcy, thank you very much for joining me in the Lived Experience. And you reached out. I did a bit of a call out for guests, and you reached out. And I've known you from a long, long way back in Warrnambool. You're a guitar player, and I think you were my student for a little short while. So,
not to mention, mate, the day spent at the skate park four or 5 years earlier than that as well.
Yes,
plenty exactly. of that going on.
I was 30 yeah. kilos lighter, exactly right, the skate park, but not anymore. But you reached out, and you've got a quite it's a tragic story because I've had another guest on who's had a similar thing happen to him. So maybe do you want to talk about your lived experience with mental illness and mental health and how it's affected you?
Yeah, for sure. So as you mentioned, Joel, I grew up in Warrnambool. Great family. We're a very, very tight family. Had great friends with them. I'm still very much close with today. We both know Warrnambool. It's a very tight-knit community. Everyone seems to know everyone, et cetera. So grew up in a very supportive, loving environment. My upbringing was awesome in that respect. And then when I was, what would I have been? I must have been around about, say, 20 or 21 at the time. We had no idea, but Mum had essentially been struggling with anxiety issues for quite some time, for really quite the large majority of her adult life, I would suggest, in ways that we were not necessarily aware of. And so I remember she got us together one day. We were just sort of sitting out the back of our house, and she said, "Oh, you know, guys," she was quite upset, visibly upset. She said, "Guys, I've got just something to let you know." She got us, all of us kids around, myself, my sister Bree, and my brother Jay, Joel, who I'm sure you know as well. And she said, "I've been really struggling with mental health. It's been going on for quite a while. I've never really let you guys know, but I just wanted to take the opportunity now because it's all starting to become a little bit too much for me. I'd like to let you know that's what's been going on. So if you ever see me struggling or anything like this, this is what's going on." Now, it's interesting, mate, at the time, anxiety seems to have become quite a buzzword, I think, over the last 10 years, I suppose. It's become quite common in the vernacular of people, and that may be a reflection of what we're going through as a human race at the moment, or it just might be a reflection of, you know, just the way society runs these days. I don't know. Or whether there's always been this level of anxiety in society, I'm not sure either, but it's certainly been something that's much more spoken about now. But back then, mate, when she mentioned that word, I literally said to her, I was like, "What's anxiety? Like, how does that show up? What's involved with that?" I'd had no idea. And so, you know, she sort of explained how her experience was and what went on for her. And then over the next six years, I should say, something like that, because I was 26 when she passed away. Over the next six years probably tells the story of quite a level of, we'll call it degradation, and sort of just slow loss, I should say, is probably it. And eventually she took her own life some 6 years later. So we've experienced all of that. And when you put the call out to the podcast for guests, I was like, I feel like I can add value here. I feel like I can share my story. And if that helps any kids in particular, children of any form of mental health issues, understand their position a whole lot better, then I'll take the opportunity to do that all day, every day, because it's not often you get the opportunity to share that and help other people. So that's what I want to share.
No, I appreciate you reaching out. And it's a very, you know, it's a very obviously hard thing to hear, you know, and there's people that this happens to, but it's not probably, not saying promoted, but it's not talked about enough. We do, you're right, we do hear anxiety and depression used a lot, but there's not much beyond that in regards to what we hear about talking about it. And unfortunately, you know, what's happened to your family is very, very, very tragic, and it's happened
and it happens, you know, unfortunately now. So maybe you want to talk back to when your mum told you about anxiety. What did you do? Was it something where you looked it up, or how did you, what was the sort of next steps to the family?
Yeah, well, the thing is, because it was to such a degree, anxiety can lead you to, anxiety can lead you to be even confused about your own anxiety. It can lead you to not even trust your own level of distrust. Like it's almost this circular nature to it that can really feed back onto itself. Anxiety is quite interesting. So when I asked Mum, tell me a bit about anxiety, what goes on for you? She even couldn't really fully language what it actually was. She just knew constantly that something was off and it wasn't right. And there was some sort of, you know, pain that she would have in her chest, in her gut, in, you know, all the symptoms that we know that come up before you're about to give a public speech and can people can live with quite consistently and constantly, so to speak. And she said it all started for her when she was young and at one of her first jobs, and she struggled to sign her name on her paycheck each week, back when that must have been what you do with paychecks. You just sign your name. I don't know. She said she'd struggled to actually sign her name. She couldn't bring the pen to actually put it on the paper to do this. And she said that happened one day and she's like, I don't think this is okay. I don't think this is normal that I can't sign my name. And so that was one of the first sort of symptoms that she had. And then from there, it grew all the way up to the day that I actually had the conversation with her. And I said to her, how does it show up now? What's the experience that you're tending to have with it now? And she said, oh, Das, I just get this massive hole in my chest, and it's just this void that can't be filled, and it just leads me to not have really any confidence, and it leads me to not necessarily enjoy being around a lot of people a lot of the time. Leads me to, you know, have all the thoughts going on in my head, drilling me for the person that I am, all of it, all the stuff that you hear that gets pretty drastic for a lot of people. And essentially that's how I got to know about it, was through, well, literally Mum's lived experience. I was literally about to call it that without realizing that's what the podcast is called. But yeah, that's how I came to become in touch with it and what it's all about.
And how did your mum, how did you guys, obviously, because you, as a kid, you want to support your mum, right? So your mum tells you this thing and you're sort of thinking as a bloke, well, how do we fix this, or how do we help? So
yeah,
what step did you take? Was it something where you, was it mum was more counselling, or what was the next step as a family with it?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So mum was seeing a lot of counsellors, a lot of therapists, was on, medication and things like that moving forward. The specifics around medication, things like that, I'm not really sure. I never got too deep into that. As a family, I think what happened for us as kids, so me, my brother and my sister, we all sort of got together a whole lot more in terms of how do we support mum and dad, because dad was at home with mum the whole time that she was experiencing it, helped her 110%, would have given absolutely everything just to see her healthy again, healthy and happy again. And I mean everything. He would have given everything he had, including, I'm sure, his own life, just to know that she was okay. You know, dad was is an incredible husband. And father. And so us as kids, we more got together in terms of how do we support mum and dad, because it's not just mum that was going through it. Now it was dad going through it with her. That makes sense. So for us, we sort of just made conscious decisions to check in probably 3 to 4 times more often than we ever really would have. And we were all sort of away from the house at the time. My sister was living at home, but then she ended up moving away to Perth. I was living in Melbourne at the time, so I wasn't home. My brother was living in, I believe he was in Warrnambool, but he wasn't actually at home at the time, wasn't living at home at the time. So we were all far enough away from home to make checking in a priority. And it was almost like that was the most control that we could have, Joel.
Mm.
But here's the interesting thing. I found in my own experience of that with mum, I found that it became really incredibly obvious and evident that mental health issues extend far beyond what you believe you can rationally help someone with a lot of the time. I remember thinking to myself, if I can just check in with mum more often, she'll start to feel better. Or if I can just encourage her to exercise, if I can encourage her to write her feelings down, if I can do all of this, she'll start to get better. But that's applying logic. That's applying logical thinking to something that is so phenomenally irrational and non-logical, to the point where what it actually ends up happening is I'll check in more often and that's great, and I still live with anxiety every day. Or I'll do exercise and I'll feel better about that, and I still live with anxiety every day. The two almost don't actually implement each other a whole ton. I don't know if that's the right word, but yeah, that's what I started to find. Was like, this is actually on a level deeper than just what we can rationally help her with, so to speak. I was having this conversation with my partner yesterday, and I said, because we've recently had a daughter, our first daughter's coming to the world. It's been awesome, 7 weeks ago. And I said to her, it's really interesting how our love for Vera, our daughter, our love for Vera doesn't actually impact generally how you can feel day to day. It's not like you've had a daughter, now you have a kid, this thing comes into your life and you just love and being a parent and life is just great now. It's life's really hard and we're a parent as well, and that's awesome. So they're two that go along the same way. And when I think about mum, and I think about, well, the feeling that my mum has for me as her son is the exact same feeling that I have for Vera, my daughter, which just goes to show you that you can have so much love for something, yet irrationally what's going on mental health for you wise is bigger and stronger than any of that feeling actually going on for the things that you love in your life. You know, I often think when people say with, you know, go on more holidays, exercise more, eat better, it's like those things will help you with your health and for the ability to go on a holiday. But the mental health stuff exists on a deeper plane than that, I suppose, is what I've experienced.
It does. And it's easier said than done as well. You know, like with my mum, she had a bipolar disorder and, you know, you need the basic things, you know, eat right and do exercise and stuff. And I could tell that all day to the thing and she just didn't do it.
Yes.
And even though she knew she wanted to do it, she just couldn't do it. So, you know, we can tell our loved ones or whoever, if someone they've got a, you know, mental illness or condition to, you know, you need to do this and this and this, but it's far more easier than said than done. And you're right, it does go on a far deeper level, and it's something where it can be frustrating if you are the loved one, because you know you still want that person to be right, and these things sound basic, but they're not that easy to put in place.
Well said, mate. Well said.
And I was going to say, so your mum, so you only found out about it later, you know, you were 20, was it 21?
Yeah, 20, 21, yeah, something like that, yeah.
So your mum, you know, sounds like you unfortunately kept this under wraps for a long, long time. So
yeah, was there probably didn't help.
No, I'm just going to say, like, it's hard to describe the word of what to say, but it's obviously a very, very tough thing for her to go through in silence for so long. So did your father know about it, or was you were all told about it at the same time?
Great question. Dad's the closest person to her, you know, throughout her adult life. So I'm sure that he understood it on a deeper level. He probably just naturally and intuitively picked up that, oh, you know, it's not normal, some of this stuff that does, or how she behaves, or what she's afraid of, or things like this. But as far as the actual official letting us know, I'm actually not sure. Actually, I've never really asked Dad. I was with him the other day and I said, you know, growing up, Dad was, did you ever notice that Mum was, you know, a bit quirky, a bit different, a bit, you know? And he's like, yeah, of course. Like, you know, that's part of what attracted me to her, in that, you know, she was different to anyone else you'd ever meet. And she had a real fun side, and all of this came out of her. But he made an interesting point, and you've experienced this yourself, Joel, I'm sure, is in smaller towns a lot of the time, and I know in Warrnambool I experienced this growing up as well, is drinking culture is a big thing. Like it's a badge of honor to start drinking a bit earlier in your life, and how many beers you can punish on a weekend is a badge of honor and things like this. I certainly remember experiencing that growing up. And so he said that, you know, growing up in, because he grew up in Melbourne, but then they moved to Warrnambool when Mum was an adult, because the drinking culture was so common, I feel like she was able probably to mask a lot of it in social situations, because you could always just have a drink, and of course that would suppress the feelings a bit, and life would appear normal on the outside. So that probably had a lot to do with it not showing up until later in life, because it could be masked a bit easier.
And why do you think it took so long for her to tell you guys? Because obviously you're a lot older. So what do you think was it just something where you didn't think maybe you'd be ready to hear it, or it was sort of getting to a point where she needed to reach out for more assistance from you, or what do you think it was?
Probably a bit of both, I would say. I think the problem with anxiety is that it's the anxiety that convinces you you shouldn't tell people. Like that's the mean circular energy of it, is you are so uncomfortable and then it tells you don't reach out for help either because that'll be even more uncomfortable. So yeah, so it's really, really hurts that way. So I would say that it I would say that she would have reached out for help earlier, but it just would have been an embarrassment thing, I would say, with mum. She probably just didn't want people to think that there was anything ultimately wrong with her, in quotation marks, when in actual fact there was never anything wrong. She probably experienced a lot of what we all can experience in life in the early days, but just didn't feel comfortable to actually talk about it or bring it out. I often think if she'd have, you know, that day that she went to sign her piece of paper, if she'd have actually called out for help that day from someone, could someone have helped her right there and then, and the initial entanglement might never have begun. But, you know, you could think about that stuff till you're blue in the face. It's probably not going to change much.
And I just want to go over this point again, because I think when people hear anxiety, they just think, oh, it's something that's not that serious, right? So maybe you want to talk from your perspective about, just describe a bit more in detail about the seriousness of it. And obviously it's a really tragic outcome. Core or led to. So maybe don't just talk about the serious stuff, because people might just think, oh, it's just a few voices in their head, or occasionally you go outside, you might get a bit tired of chest because you're, as you said, going before a speech or something. So
yeah,
maybe just talk about it from your perspective and give people a bit more education on it.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked this question. It's good to have that opportunity. So typically when people, I think, hear of anxiety these days, one of two things usually comes up. Number one is, oh, what's there to worry about? Everything's going great for you. Look at you. You got a great house. You got a great family. You got a loving household and loving husband, wife, et cetera. You're fine. Like, what's there to worry about? You'll be okay, is usually one that can come up. And the other is, oh, we all get a bit nervous from time to time though. Like, you know, life's not easy for anyone, is sort of the way that we can look at it. Right. And you know, fair enough. If that's the perspective you got, I'm envious of people that can have that perspective. I'm envious of people who can go, oh yeah, but you'll be fine, because it means they've never had to empathize with the experience that someone could be going through when they actually are in that struggle. If that makes sense. So, the seriousness of it is that when it is taken to a level or a degree that appears unresolvable or unmanageable is probably the best way to describe it, Joel. When it's taken to a level of that, you essentially start to slowly see the person that you love go further and further and further and further into their shell. And when I say further and further into their shell, I mean that mentally. And I also actually mean it quite literally in terms of physically. So mum was really at the point by the end where leaving the house was a pipe dream. Or if she did, it was phenomenally uncomfortable for her to do so. And then really within the house, it even became, you know, within the house, it was just, she was either in the bedroom sleeping or just out the back having a coffee and a smoke. And that was kind of it, you know, that was, you know, so even within our own household, there was open parts where it just became more comfortable to be than others. We had an upstairs of our house at home. Man, I couldn't tell you for how many years of the final years of her life, she just never went up there. Like there was never anything up there, you know, it was just no reason. To see her go through that and to see her just become less and less and less of this vibrant, loving person she once was really tough to watch her go through that. And the thing is, it doesn't happen overnight. It happens day by day, and actually happens almost, shall we say, year by year. And so much so that it will happen at such a slow rate that generally day to day, you don't really notice it until one day something clicks and you're like, man, they're just not looking well, are they? They're just not the person they used to be.
Mm.
And then because it's happened day by day over so long, in order to start resolving that, can be such a long journey back, because that's now a day by day and year by year journey, that a lot of the time, I think what I know I wish had happened, or I wish for other people, is that they could go back to when it's first realized and take it seriously when someone says, hey, I'm not doing all that well, and do what needs to be done in those early days just to make sure they're taken care of and they've got a nice big helicopter platform to land on when they want to talk about what's going on for them. And it's nice and safe to do so, because I feel like if you could somewhat untangle it in those early days, it'd make the rest of it a whole lot easier.
Yeah, I don't think people realize how much you must have, with anxiety, how much of a daily battle must have been for your mum, just with the in the head and just being in your head so much. And going to sleep would probably be the only time you can sort of escape, because you can sleep and then you're back up again. And
that's exactly it, mate.
Very tiring. Yeah. Like, it's extremely tiring. Or I can imagine it would be. And there's a bit of similarities with bipolar. So bipolar, my mum used to sleep with people with bipolar sleep a lot. Well, my mum did anyway. So, but it was sort of just to escape the, the manic or whatever it was. But I can imagine it just must have been very, very tiring for your mum with every day to have that going through all the time. And then it must have been very, very difficult.
The tiring thing is interesting. When we were kids, mum would sleep a lot. And when you're a kid, you think that's normal. I didn't know. I thought all parents, like, if they can have a nap during the day, everyone naps, don't they? But mum used to like just sleep every day, you know? And it wasn't until I got older or started hanging out with kids with, you know, other parents, of course, where they didn't. And I just thought it was a whole lot more normal than it ever actually was. Turns out mum was probably just sleeping off, as you said, the fatigue from just the battle she was probably going through most days. So,
It's hard. It's hard to give that foresight as a young kid. My mum did the same thing, but until you get older, you don't really realize it's very hard to give someone who's young that foresight, especially if they don't know about what's going on. But even if they do know what's going on, it's still very hard. You know, that's your light living situation. That's what you think's normal. And as you said, it's not until you go to other people's houses to realize it's not as normal.
Yes, totally. Yeah.
Maybe do you want to talk about, obviously, you mentioned at the start, and I'll just give a warning for anyone listening, but, you know, obviously you lost your mum, and that I've done it as well. And it's a very, very hard experience. Probably the hardest thing I've went through. Mm. But look, you can say as much as you want about it or not, but at the time, like, I can imagine what was just, it would have been a very big shock, obviously. But maybe just want to, because the thing I want to get with this episode is the impact it has on family. So when your loved one has a mental illness, it's not just them who have, it's affected. It obviously affects yourself, your brothers, your sisters, and your father, obviously. Mm. And just that, it's just a big hole or a big kick in the bloody guts. And then obviously you've got that for the rest of your life. So maybe just want to talk about that whole time and that experience. And if you can.
With mum passing away specifically. Yeah. So I remember, there was one day I was down in Warrnambool. So I must've been, I don't know, down there for sort of some holidays or whatever it might've been. And I remember mum had gone downhill further and further and further. And it was becoming obvious that she was starting to die. But to me, this is what I thought. She was starting to die, but I knew the only way that she could go would be suicide. I mean, she didn't have cancer. She didn't have that. It wasn't that form of death. Like, if you met someone you knew that was dying of, say, for example, cancer, and you look at them and you go, I think they're on their way out. You know, this is getting tough. It was that again, but it was the mental health edition, which was really strange to see. Like, physically her body was, you know, somewhat otherwise okay, but mentally it was what was breaking her down. And I remember two things happened. I came downstairs and saw mum making a coffee, which I often used to see her there making a coffee and having a smoke. That was what her life had become at the end. We often have a joke about that now because, you know, what else are you meant to do? That's who she became. And she loved it. But I remember seeing her at the coffee machine, and she was so frail and she was so gray in her skin. And I remember looking at her thinking, it's coming. Like, it's almost any day now. This is going to happen, is how I feel. Like, it can't get better from here. She's almost like she's already passed away, but her body is still here. It was really tough to see. Mm. And so I had, day went on, blah, blah. And I had a conversation with her. It might've been that day or it might've been later that day. I can't remember what it was, but I said, Mum, how are you doing? You know, how's everything coming along? And she said, she goes, oh, Das, I'm really struggling. And I said, I'm really sorry to hear that, Mum. And she said, Das, it's amazing that you all you do is you just sit here and listen. That's all you do. Thank you so much. You don't try and fix me. You don't try and change me. All you ever do is you just come home and you just say, how are you doing? And then you just listen. And that means the world to me. I said, that's okay, mom. I'm here to listen. She said, I said, is there any way further that I can help you? And she said, no, Das, I need to go through this by myself. This is my journey. And this is something that I need to learn to overcome or live through. Deep down, I knew she wasn't going to live through it. It just wasn't obvious. And I said, okay, well, is there any way that I can help you do that? And she said, Das, just be yourself. You just be you. And I'll do me, but all I want you to do is just be you. And I'll never for the life of me forget that conversation, because it was one of the last conversations I really remember with mum. And the thing she said to me was, Das, just be you. I'm like, man, what a gift, right? Mm. So anyway, I left that conversation. I can't remember how the conversation wrapped up, blah, blah. Left that conversation, left the house, must have gone back to Melbourne, et cetera. And just knowing that, just deep down, having this sense that it was like, this is coming soon. And so I was actually on Stradbroke Island, just off Brisbane. And I was writing a book. I was on sort of like a book writing retreat. I was, you know, spending a week out there and just putting a book together, whatever. So for those that don't know Stradbroke Island, you are in Brisbane. So I was living in Melbourne at the time. So I had to fly to Brisbane. From Brisbane, you catch a ferry across to Stradbroke Island, right? It's about an hour and a half ferry or something like that. Anyway, it's like the fourth night of it. And I look at my phone. I've got about 4 missed calls from my brother, 3 missed calls from my sister, few text messages, Das, call me now, Das. Hey, Das, need you to give us a call when you can, et cetera. I looked at it and I was like, I know exactly what's happened. I didn't even have to make the call. I knew for sure. Now, I can't even tell you who it was for sure. I think it was my brother that I called. I think. I'm 90% sure it was Jay. Called him, said, hey, how's it going? I think you've got some news for me, do you? And from my memory, he said, yeah, Das, mum's passed away. Okay, all right, okay, thanks. And I remember just saying, okay, thanks. I just took on the news like it was like someone was telling me that, hey, just letting you know that your tax return will be $24 this year. Okay, thanks, no worries. Like it was so, it just didn't hit me in the moment. And I said, how's dad? And he said, yeah, he's no good. He can't speak at the moment, but yeah, maybe give him a call later on and we'll go from there. I said, no worries. I went upstairs and I was with a group of about 7 of us, I think it was, that were doing this writing thing. And I went up to him and said, hey guys, just letting you know, my mum's passed away. I think she might've committed suicide. And they all looked at me shocked. And I remember being shocked that they were shocked. Does that make sense? Like in my mind, I was like, it's all good, guys. It's fine. Like, it's all good. Like, I'll go home. That's okay. You guys don't let this influence you. I'll take care of myself. Mm. And they were just like, gave me a big hug. And I was like, it's all good. Don't worry about it. I walked back downstairs and like, I don't know, mate, after about 15 seconds of just being by myself, it all hit me. Like just this tidal wave of like, bricks someone had dropped from the roof, smashed me to the ground. And I was like, oh crap. Okay. I've just realized the reality and the enormity of what has just occurred. I went back upstairs and went up to him. I was like, oh crap, guys. Like, you know, in much more profanic language. I was just in shock and my body was just shaking and all of this sort of stuff. Right. Now from there, my only option was to actually sleep the night there out on that island and actually catch a ferry back that morning. Mm. Here's what I had to do. Sleep on the island that night, catch a ferry from Stradbroke Island that morning back to Brisbane, fly from Brisbane to Melbourne that day, and then drive from Melbourne to Warrnambool 3.5 hours to be with my family later that night. And all I did when I was just on the plane and in the car was I just stared at the back of the seat in front of me and bawled my eyes out. I feel so sorry, Joel, for the people that had to sit next to me on that plane because I was a mess and they would have had no idea why, but I just couldn't control it. I was just profusely crying for about 24 hours. And from there got home and I feel like when I actually got home and could be with dad and could be with my sister and my brother and my partner at the time, I feel like once I was there, I was like the bird was back to its nest. Like I was okay. I could be okay again, and I could just be with them and hug them, and we could all be a complete mess together. What was worth was being a complete mess just alone. I just wanted to be a complete mess with them, if that makes sense. So from there, mate, I would say that the impact that it has had on our family moving forward from that time is one of the most underestimated things that anyone could ever imagine. Losing a family member, especially someone so young, so untimely, and in such an unfortunate also like suicide has like this level of darkness to it, to society, you know what I mean? So that added edge to it was so difficult. I remember I was having a chat with a good mate of ours, you know him, Fabian Stora, a previous guitar student of yours as well. Yeah, he's a good friend of mine.
Yeah. Yep.
And I said to him around about a week later after mum died, he said, "How you doing?" And I said, "Yeah, mate, I'm all good. I feel like I'm better. You know, like I've had my chance to cry. I've gotten angry about it. I'm good now, mate. I think though I'm good." Mate, I was still in shock. I reckon I was still in shock for the next 4 months, let alone that first week of grief. And for the first year of it all, it was really difficult in terms of mentally understanding what dad now needed, because he needed to be taken care of because he really couldn't take care of himself. So we kids got right around him, what our siblings needed, what I needed. I was running businesses at the time, so I still needed to be somewhat on for work and things like this. And that first year is a blur and it was really difficult, but I'll tell you this, mate, that first year was a dream ride compared to the next years that followed it. The first year, I feel like I was still just in shock the whole time. And I think our whole family was somewhat adjusting to this new life that has been thrust upon you that you never even knew existed. The years that have followed, years 2, 3, 4, 5. Now we're up to, I think, year 6 or something like that. 6 years since my 5 or 6. I lose track sometimes. These years that have followed have been, I would say, far more difficult. And I feel like that doesn't get spoken about enough, because a lot of people go, "Oh, you know, you had the grief, you got through it, and now life's easier on the other side." But I reckon that's a load of crap, mate. I think that sometimes it even gets harder with time as it goes on, because now there's more things that we realize she's actually missing out on. You know, I've just had my first daughter, who's her granddaughter, and they'll never meet each other. And every time I look at my daughter, I'm like, if you just knew who your nana was back in her heyday and how incredible it would be for you to have met her and vice versa. It pains me each time that, you know, that I realize that. So we got a really bright future ahead as a family. But with every shred of brightness that we are going to experience comes the associated brightness that also mum won't feel because she's not here. So there's learning to manage that and learning to juggle that and learning to live with that. Early days, I feel like I always tried to solve it and resolve it really quick and move on with my life and try to get back to normal. I've since learned that that is an impossible task, and surrendering to the new life that you have is actually, and learning to live with that is actually more the proper path, I would suggest.
No, you're spot on. And you're exactly right. So my mum's just passed the year anniversary. She passed away. And
yeah. I'm sorry to hear it, mate. I do remember when you posted that on social. And
Mine was in the sudden thing like yours. Mine was 4 weeks of palliative care in Lindock every day with this.
Yes.
Progressive. It was really hard. But you're right in what you said, that all the achievements you're going to do, that's the big kick in the guts. Because I'm the same as you. We bought a house, never had a house growing up. You know, so we had a house, and like you buy the house and it's supposed to be a joyous occasion, and you think the same thing as what you're thinking. Well, I want my mum to stay over. I want to share this with her, or this achievement.
Yes.
All these achievements you do moving forward, you're right. Your mind, or my mind at least, goes to that place as well. Like, it's hard to be happy in that moment because you're right. Your person who you love a lot, who you want to be there, is not there.
Yes.
So that achievement you do is always a bit taken away from it every single time. And you're right. Mm. That's what I found very hard. And it's spot on saying exactly what you said about the, like, even though it's, but as you said, people might think, "Oh, it's grief for 3 months and then you're over it." But I don't think it is at all. It's a lifelong thing.
Yeah. Yep. 100%. And then What's interesting, Joel, is, you know, I've experienced quite a traumatic grief, I would call it, at quite a young age. And I keep wrestling with the fact that I'm like, man, like as we get older, more and more and more of this is going to happen. It's not like everyone has that one or two traumatic griefs in their life. Like as we get older and ideally much older, you know, grief is going to become a much more consistent experience of life. So learning how to manage it early, I suppose, is somewhat of a benefit, an unfortunate benefit, but I suppose it's there.
Yeah, and exactly. But the thing as well is like your, as you said, your reality is permanently changed from that moment on. Like there's, and anyone who acts, you know, it's like it hasn't is not something you can really do. So it's such, I've never experienced anything more life-changing than that. So have you used this event to shape your life moving forward? Like what have you tried? Because for me, oh, I had all these regrets and my mind was always going, I should have done this more with her. I should have done this more with regrets. Yeah. So I had found it really hard still to get out of the regret mind. But how do you use this event or this moment? How have you used it to, in the last 5-6 years, to change your life? What have you done? Have you taken some lessons from it? Or is there some things where you have more introspection where you're sort of maybe, let's say, things become less of a problem for you? Or have you used it?
We've certainly become a whole lot closer as a family. I'm certainly closer with my sister than I ever was. We've really bonded through the grief and have been there to support each other through the grief. And as I said, I've just had a daughter and, her family will be expanding soon and things like that as well. So that's been awesome to be on that journey with her. Personally, for me, it was a lot to do with work. So as I said, I've run a few businesses and things like this over the time. And so when you're a business owner, you always need to be somewhat on and you need to work pretty hard. And I came to a point where I couldn't do that any longer. The experience of the grief and the overwhelm of the grief became far bigger than I could handle, plus run a business at the same time. So I remember taking quite a bit of time off and went and did a bit of travel and just resettled myself in that way. And then when I got back to working, I still probably am not the operator that I once was before Mum died, with that clarity of mind that I used to have. But I just know, I feel the sensations of that overwhelm getting to its boiling point a whole lot earlier now. And I just stop. I'm like, I'm not stressing myself out. I'm not going further for this than I need to. If the client wants me, the client will call me back tomorrow. I don't have to get them back today. Whereas before, I would just work. Whatever needed to be done, I'll work on it. Let's go. And it was like a badge of honor. Now I'm like, my mental health and my stability is infinitely more valuable than any bit of business growth that I could have. It doesn't mean I still don't love business growth and still want to succeed in that and do really well with that and add a lot of value to people through that. But it's just a level of priority now. And then again, it's changed with, having a daughter, like, you know, she takes precedence over all of it. So yeah, that's been a key thing to change. I still have many days, mate, still have tons where I'm like, man, did I learn anything from this grief at all? Like, look at me still working myself into the ground. Why am I doing this? I should, I still have days like that. They still do come back. Absolutely. But far, far, far less than they used to. That's for sure. But that, mate, that took years to learn. That took one moment to learn through like burning out and stuff like that, but years to actually get better at managing that and having some stability around that. And I'm pretty happy with where that's at these days. Yeah.
And during this last 5 years, have you gone and spoken to anyone, or was it something you've just worked through yourself, or have you dealt with?
Yeah, no, mate, I've really come to enjoy speaking to therapists, counselors, things like that. I really love the insights that they can offer. And I'm, I've got a background in psychology myself. And so I'm fascinated by it nonetheless. So I've enjoyed speaking to grief counselors early. Huge shout out to Shane Storer, as in Fab and Alex's old man. He was unreal in those early days helping me out. He's based in Warrnambool. He was so, so great to speak with. And then since then, I've had a number of chats with just different coaches, counselors, et cetera, and everyone's got their different perspective and view on it. And everyone's been a good help in a different way based on where I'm at in my own journey. So there's every chance now, if I spoke to Shane, the help wouldn't be as massive as it was back in those early days. And that's when I needed him then. And he was unreal for that stage, So yeah, mate. Oh man. no shame coming from this side of the ring in terms of talking to people, getting the help you need and getting that out there. I'd highly recommend that to anyone experiencing not only some form of grief, but just in terms of when you are living with a parent with a mental illness, there are impacts that it will have on you that you may not necessarily be aware of until someone shines the light on it and goes, hey, you realize that happens because of this? And you're like, oh, wow, that's insightful. That actually has changed the way I see the world through learning that. So,
and what insight would you say has been the most impactful to you that you've gathered from the...
Mate, great question. Best one, I know off the top of my head easily, is learning that in the same way that, say, having a heart attack or getting cancer or anything like that is the way that the body dies, like it's like a physical thing that leads to a physical death. Mm-hmm. Suicide is the same for mental health, but it's just the only way it knows how to end itself. I remember thinking that suicide was a rational choice for mum. And when you think it's a rational choice, like she's of sound mind when she's doing it, then it leads you to open up to blaming yourself. Because what you do is you go, well, could I have done anything different? Was it something I said or didn't say, or something I did or didn't do when I was younger that helped, that contributed to, and it's just not the case. It's like, that's kind of like saying, is there something that I did when I was younger or said or didn't say that led to my dad having a heart attack or that led to my uncle getting cancer? Or that it's like, no, the body's doing its own thing. The brain's doing its own thing as well. It's not rational. And when I realized that the suicide was the way of passing away for mum, it just took the pressure off myself for thinking that I was somewhat to blame or needed to take responsibility for her death or anything like that, which is very hard to get your head around when it first happens, suicide, because the natural thing is to go, geez, did I contribute to this? Was there something different I could have done? I've since learned there was nothing different I could have done. There's nothing I could have done that could have added to it or subtracted to it. It doesn't exist on that rational, logical plane. So that was really relieving to let go of through that process.
Yeah. It's amazing insight, because I guarantee everyone who experiences that with exactly what you said would be thinking, going back to them and saying, you know, what could I have done more? Could I have done this? And it would be an absolute lifelong burden for some people who don't come to that same conclusion as you have, which is the right one. Absolutely. It's the right one.
Yeah. My advice there would be, do whatever you can, have as many conversations as you can, read as many books as you can, whatever, listen to this podcast again if you need to eventually come to that realization yourself. Because when it finally clicks, it's a ripper. It's quite the reliever. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I don't think it's a really important thing you said. And that's going to be a great clip to share, because it's such a good frame of, and it's the best explanation I've ever heard. But, so many people who would have this tragic event happen to be still living, you know, 20, 30 years later with that same sort of, every bloody day they'd be kicking themselves in the head about, I should have done this and shouldn't have done that, because I don't realize what you've realized. So it's a very insightful and very impactful thing you've got. Now, did you gather that from a counselor, or was that something you come to yourself, or how did you learn that?
A bit of both. I think it was a conversation that I had with a counselor one time, and then I was just sort of thinking about the conversation after. And then it just popped into my head. And then I confirmed it with her after. And she's like, yes, Stas, you're getting it. It's starting to unravel a bit. You're starting to understand that it's, although you're your own center of your own world, this happened outside the center of your own world. This is not the case. So,
and how did that realization change your life? Because I can imagine it would have, was it just the weight off your shoulder, or was it something where you was not in your head as much thinking about scenarios, or how did it change your life?
Yeah, both, mate. Yeah, both. Whatever was good, throw it all in the basket. It was really relieving. So it was almost like a physical weight off my shoulders that sometimes is there without you even realizing it's there until it gets relieved. You don't realize that it was sitting on top of you. And then just the because essentially what we're talking about here is the emotion of shame or guilt. And shame or guilt will ruin the mind if you allow it to. Like it can knock people down over a long period of time and just edge away at people's mental health. So unless you're able to resolve the shame or guilt, it'll just sit there, and it'll always sit there and remind you that you're not as good as you think you are. And it'll just it'll just put words into your mind that aren't necessarily always 100% true. They're true to the guilt, but they're not necessarily true to you. There's a difference. So relieving that pressure just almost instantaneously started to resolve some of that, those words in my mind that would, you know, blame me for it. And if you sit and watch those words as they come up, you kind of realize, you're like, man, that's some pretty mean stuff those words are saying. You know what I mean? If you lived with a housemate that said this stuff to you, you'd move out of the house. But unfortunately, this is a house sometimes you can't move out of. So, yeah.
Now, that insight you come to, is that something your family shares now with you, or did you something you share?
Yeah, I remember totally. Yeah, I remember having this conversation with Bree, my sister. And, yeah, because she, as far as I know from conversations with her, she never experienced that. She remembers knowing from day one, oh, this isn't my fault. This is mental health. This is, so she had a much more deeper and more accurate insight than I had early on. So it was good to get the insight from her as well. And because sometimes if you have an awesome insight, you're like, just better confirm this one. Cause I hope if I confirm this with someone that they're like, yes, Darcy, you're getting it. And that's absolutely what happened from a number of sources. So that's just my learning process, is confirm it with a couple of people first. So yeah, that helped a lot.
And how is your father going? Because I can imagine it must be like extremely, very, extremely hard. So yes. What was the support, or how's that been going the whole time?
Yeah, really tough few years. And he still has days now where he really feels it hard. I know that he does. But he's since remarried. Jan has come to our house and she's awesome, mate. She's so good for him. And they have a great relationship, and we're so stoked to have her in our lives as kids. Because the thing is, when someone remarries, particularly after what we've experienced, mm-hmm. you hear some pretty horror stories, mate. You hear of, dad remarried and then she's not, we don't like her, and all you hear is some horror stories. So, to have her in our lives and for us to love having her around is awesome. So that's helped a lot, and it's helped him to, I'm not going to say move on, because I don't know that you ever fully move on, but it has at least helped him to move forward and keep putting one foot in front of the other. And it's given him somewhat of a bit of a zest for life back again, because Jan loves to travel and, they love going out and they're foodies. So they love trying all expensive food whenever they can and, doing all cool stuff, which he couldn't really do when Mum was crook. I know that you cared for your mother quite deeply and literally physically, like you were literally there with your mother side by side with her a lot. So you know what it's like. There's a lot of things you can't do because you're taking care of a loved one. And that was definitely the experience for Dad. So the sadness he experiences from losing Mum will never leave. And he is now also starting to enjoy some other things as well. So, yeah.
No, it's good to hear. Now with, what do you think needs to be done in this space more? Because I think depression, anxiety, people know about it, but I don't think they know it to the extent of what the actual outcomes can be. You generally don't hear suicide mentioned with anxiety. You always hear with depression and other things, but you never really hear it mentioned with anxiety at all.
Yes.
What do you think needs to be done from that perspective? Just because I think there is a general awareness around anxiety, which is good, but I just don't think there's a deeper understanding that what unfortunate outcomes it actually can lead to. So yes. What do you think needs to be done more around that?
I think people need to know how to listen. The answer is actually not necessarily to do more. Maybe the answer is actually to do less. Meaning, and allow me to explain that, meaning we have all these movements teaching us how to talk about it. And people are saying, talk about it more. And that is the right thing. That's a good thing that people are going to talk about it more. But if more people are talking, but no one's listening, then the talking has no value. And I know for Mum that the most valuable thing that ever happened was never anything I said. It was nothing I ever said. It was when I actually said the least and just gave her space to just unload. And just have that experience and that opportunity just to talk about what was on her chest and not be judged for it, I think was key. And so what can we do? I'm not sure. I don't know about any charity that needs to be started or any sort of, phone hotline that someone could start. I don't know about any of that. I'm really not well accustomed to be able to answer that. But all I know is that the more that you actually just listen to people without judgment, the more free people can begin to feel. And you and I can do that, Joel, whoever's listening to this podcast, you can do that in the very next conversation that you have. That's something that you can literally do today. You don't need to donate any money to any charity. You don't, and you should go for it if you want. But I just know that listening is one of the most valuable assets that, particularly in the Western world, we haven't really adopted all that well in the modern world. So that's what I would suggest.
And advice for grief, because I don't think gets spoken about enough and people don't really talk about enough. So what advice do you have for someone to help or to deal with grief? Because there's no handbook about it. So maybe talk about what, obviously you don't want to go through that situation again, but if you had your time over and you had to go through it again, what are some things maybe you would have done differently or what sort of advice would you have given yourself?
Yeah, good one. Give yourself time. Grief has its own timeline and goes through its own ups and downs and its own loop-de-loops. And you can have times where you think that you're through it and you're all taken care of. And then it just comes and belts you in the face again. I heard a really good metaphor once that grief is like you were out on a ship in the middle of the ocean and a tidal wave came and rocked your boat. And when it first happens, all you're doing is swallowing water, trying to breathe, thinking that if I can just get to the surface here, I'll be okay. And you get to the surface and the tidal wave comes and knocks you down again. And then you've just left there only ever just having enough oxygen just to breathe in those early days. And then eventually what happens is the sunlight starts to come out and the waves kind of go a little bit softer. They're not so drastic anymore. And perhaps you might find a piece of wood wreckage from the wreckage of the ship that you can hold onto and float onto for a while. And that's helpful. But every now and then those tidal waves are just going to come and crash again because that's what an ocean does. And I remember hearing that and just going like, man, that's so relieving to know that it's okay to get bashed by the tidal wave of grief because it's going to happen anyway. We don't have any control over that. So I wish that I had given myself earlier on that freedom to actually not be okay, that freedom to just fall to pieces and surrender to the pain of it all, because it's there to be felt for a reason and it's there to be felt anyway. It's always just going to find a way to come out. So might as well feel it and sit there and be knocked over by it and surrender to it and have that experience and let that be okay. And whatever that involves for people is completely up to them. So that's one part of it, definitely. But with grief, because it's so misunderstood in the Western world, largely because we don't understand death, death is so swept underneath the rug in the Western world. So much so that I remember having this conversation with a good friend of mine who lost his mum around about 6 months after I did. And I said, mate, how you doing with the whole grief thing? Because I was struggling. I'm like, surely you're struggling too. Like, you know, almost like, hey, can we struggle together? Because I want to have this chat. And he goes, oh, mate, you know, one thing really, really helped my grief journey. I said, what was that? He goes, I went and traveled India for a few months. I said, okay, tell me more. He goes, mate, after mum died and I was in India, some of the conversations I had with Indians about death and how they approach it and what they make it mean completely shifted my definition of where my mum is and what the purpose of her life was and everything. And he goes, it's just made this whole experience, a really difficult experience, a little bit easier. And I remember thinking, yeah, I think we've got a few things to learn over here in the Western world about death and what it actually means. And really, when you start exploring what death means, you really start exploring what life means. So really questioning it, mate. Like, that's the thing, is death is so unquestioned and no one wants to talk about it. Giving yourself the opportunity to actually really question it and get curious about it, it'll change your life for sure. So more conversation about that sort of stuff would be super handy. Yeah.
100%. And I think with grief, we got this stupid view here. I think when someone passes away and the funeral's done and a week later, you're expected to get back to normal, which is not right. Like, I know from talking to people, it might be 5 years, 10 years later, and you're right, waves come up. Mm. And for me, the worst thing that happens to me, I've got the auto photo on my phone. So I've obviously have a lot of photos of my mum there, and occasionally pop up and then I see it and then a wave comes. So
yeah,
you're right in how to describe it. But yeah, the grief thing, I don't think we understand it at all of how to deal with it and how it's a really, really long, long process, and that's okay.
Yes.
I think it would be abnormal if you could have your grief over in a week. Like, you'd be, I don't know, maybe a sociopath or something.
Yeah, something's up. Yeah.
Exactly. But the death and the palliative care, or the palliative side of it as well, I 100% agree with what you said about that. I think it's something that we struggle to talk about, whereas other cultures like India or Mexico, for example, it's such a different perspective they have they have on it. And I think over here, ours is a very still, it's a very hidden, it's a very, you don't talk about it. It's a very, you know, process it on yourself. Don't, it's a very, I think it's a very stunted a view of it, because I think it's something everyone goes through, but you're right. I don't think we've, especially in the Western world, especially in Australia, it's something that we deal with very, very poorly in terms of palliative care and the grief and the death experience, I think.
The best help that I got was always from people who had experienced it already. You know, they can come up to you and just say, hey, I get it. I know how you're doing. I know that it's probably a bit lonely. I know the rest of the world out here doesn't understand it all what you're going through, but I got you. I remember playing golf with a bloke one day and I'd never met him before. We were on like the first hole we were playing together and mum came up in like the first hole of conversation. And I remember him just giving me this look. He goes, I got you, mate. I know what you're going through. I lost a son. I can't. Oh, no, that's all right. He just lost his father, recently lost his father. And he goes, I got you, mate. It's all good. And then that's all he ever needed to say. And I just knew I was in the bounds of safety with a guy who got it and I got him, you know, and not much needs to be said when you understand that about each other.
Exactly right. You know, you have that level of understanding of the experience and exactly right. But I was going to say as well, for me with my mum passing, it's made me more empathetic. I'm definitely a lot more patient now. For whatever reason, it's just changed me from that regard. How has it changed you personally in regards to, you mentioned a little bit before, but has there been one or two things you find yourself, you're now, as you said, you prioritize yourself and your mental well-being more, whereas the past you wouldn't. Is there anything else you've learned or you've adopted or you think just you've changed about yourself from it?
It's so easy now to tap into how would I be behaving around this person knowing that one day they will actually pass away. Okay, so when mum died, you have memories with your mum. Well, I'm creating memories now, like with you, Joel, like right now, one day you'll pass away and I'm going to remember. I remember I was on a podcast with him once. So it changes how you interact day to day with people, because you're like, one day this will be a memory and I'll think about this moment when I hear about their funeral. And so it just makes you, patience a great word, mate. It makes you just realize that like there's way more important things than that person needing to get this right, or that person needing to agree with me, or that person needing to settle down if they're annoying me or whatever. It's just like, just, I suppose, let them be them. That's their journey. That's who they are, as opposed to something that I wish they were or weren't. You know what I mean? So patience, a great word. Patience for the personalities of people that maybe you might not have had patience for, because you know, they're someone's father, they're someone's mother, they're someone's son, someone's daughter. And when they pass away, I want to be able to look back on it and go, I like that I thought positively about them when they were here. Because, yeah, one day they won't be. Yeah.
Well, I think it helps you catch yourself a bit more. And as you said, pull yourself more into that thinking, because sometimes you get really lost. Like in the job I work on, get really lost. Like, you know, this person's an idiot or this problem's a big problem and it's really not.
Yeah.
I've been able to really, for me personally, pull myself out of things that used to, in the past, I would just get sucked into. Now I just pull myself out of it and it's not a big problem. I think you get that extra level of perspective and you do, I don't know, you almost feel more zen-like in yourself. And as you said, you appreciate people more. You do have those thoughts and realizations. You know that exactly right. That interaction, you never know, might be the last time you interact with someone, whatever. So you want to make it a good interaction. Or, you know, you want to let this person have a win because, you know, they'll make their day, whatever it is. So I think what you said spot on. And I think using tragic situations like you had and stuff, but just realizing you can obviously puts a hole in your, you know, there's a hole that's always going to be there. It can't be filled. And that's just going to be a fact for both of us. But realizing you will gain some perspective and you will gain some insights and you will gain some, let's say, maybe different personality traits that will actually help your life.
Yes.
And I think that's the way I've been looking at it now, is what I've gone through has been the hardest thing ever, but I instantly, that's my hardest situation ever. Everything else that comes now, it's not a big problem.
Yeah.
You might think it's a big problem. It's not. I don't really buy into it too much. And it's just made my life actually overall better, even though it's got that hole, but my life actually has improved a lot in regards to, you know, as I said, patience and just realizing things that are problems aren't problems. There's no such thing in Australia, in my opinion, as a real compared to what you've gone through, what I've gone through.
The real
stuff. That's a problem. Everything else is not a problem.
Yeah. As I said, in business and things like that, I must say in sales and business conversations that I've had, and I know you work closely with Jim, so you know what it's like to operate with a man that can have business conversations day to day. I've certainly lost a lot of fear for people that I might want to connect with in the business world or things like that. Previously, I'd be like, oh, I don't know if I'm capable of talking to them or whatever. Now I'm like, do you have any idea how little it would hurt me to be rejected by that person through a business conversation compared to losing your mum? Like, it's just made all that a whole lot easier and simpler. It's just, I don't care. Like,
it's a fuel source. Yeah. And that's the way I view it. It's a fuel source. And like, if you can pull yourself back to that, you're right. It's a crap thing, right? Never going to change it. But if you frame it, if you let it get you down, and as you said, you can go, great, I should have done this and this and this, you're never going to get anywhere. But if you reframe it, as you said, to be a fuel source, sort of, as you said, to take those, just to be way more courageous than what you maybe would have been previously, because you've had that hardest experience that anyone's going to go through. There's nothing harder that I know of or I've gone through that's going to be really than that. So
yeah,
it's a great way to look at it, Darcy. So you're saying that you've been more with your business now, you're more confident because you recall back to that situation that you've been feeling like, I can do anything, or has it impact yourself?
That has. And then also, because in business, you interact with people all day, every day. Business is a people game. And so I've also now been much more empathetic with people that I connect with in business.
Mm.
A couple of reasons here, Joel. I'll be interested in your thoughts on this too. Number one, just in general in life, you have no idea what people are going through behind the scenes. And so I've been much more where I used to be probably a bit more, how would I say, I don't think cutthroat's the right answer word for it, because I definitely wasn't that, but I was definitely more dominant, I would say, more forward in a lot of my conversations. I've learned to let that go because, you know, people are probably having an experience today that everyone's got their stuff going on. I've definitely developed a whole lot more, I believe, if I may say so myself, a lot more empathy in my business conversations now. And because of that, my relationships in business have been a whole lot more meaningful. They've just been better relationships, I would say, rather than transactional, so to speak. So that's been really cool. But the other thing about business specifically is that a lot of people in business are some of the most stressed people you could ever meet. They've got a lot on their plate. They've got a lot of problems to solve. They've got a lot of responsibilities. And so if anyone ever has mental stuff going on, those responsibilities can just compound really quickly. So I've learned to be like, hey, you know, just keep that in mind when you're having business conversations. They're a person first before they're ever a business owner. And so the person matters infinitely more than their title. So take care of the person first and the business will come as a result of that, is what I've learned.
Yeah, I always think the best thing, the way I look at it is, I never sort of, if someone acts like an idiot to, like, let's say they're aggressive to you or rude, whatever it is, I never react to that behavior. Whereas now I'm thinking, well, what made that person be like that?
Yeah.
I've always got that in the back of my head. So what made that person be like that? So they're generally never angry with you, or they're not, you know, whatever. There's something going on in their life or something's happened to them that's made in that way. So I look at everyone like that now with a negative interaction, in regards to a negative interaction they have with me.
Yeah.
If it's for whatever reason, I never take it personally. I'm always looking at what made that person act that way.
Yes.
And once you get down to the drill of it, you look at certain things in their life that must be going on, you think, oh, you know, whatever. It makes things a lot easier.
Yeah.
In regards to the empathy, the empathy, I think, for whatever reason, it's heightened since this thing. And I find myself actually wanting, and this might sound strange, but my mum was a really, really nice person, really, really sweet, friends with everyone. That's not like me. That's not really my nature. But I found myself trying to be more like her. So trying to be more, honor her memory and try and be, you know, carry her traits with me more. So I found myself being, you know, trying to be more open with people, be more proactive in friendliness in regards to the office environment or whatever it is. So that's what I've been trying to do more of. Yeah.
That's awesome, mate. I've got a question actually, and I'll be curious about this. You mentioned that the podcast got a negative review, and that was what when I actually saw the video on LinkedIn.
Okay.
First of all, how did that happen and how did that go down? And then did you apply some of this thinking to that negative review and
I initially was annoyed because what happened was I had a guest on and she was saying something that's her opinion and I just agree with it. Like, if a guest says something, I'm not going to challenge them on it too much. And then the lady left a, I've done like, you know, 45 episodes and mainly talk about mental health, but this episode was a little bit different. And she left this review and I'm thinking, bloody hell, like annoying because I had all the 5-star rating and then obviously had the average and then I wrecked it. But saying that, I actually did another episode talking about it. The actual lady then went back to a review. I don't know if she heard the episode, but she changed it from 3 to 4-star, which is fine. And she changed it, but then, which was nice to know that she probably heard the second episode and felt bad and changed it. But it was a bit annoying because it just like, you know, you can have all this good interaction and then the one thing that it wasn't even that bad really is a 3-star review. It wasn't a 1-star.
Yeah.
But it just got me that down that back. I'm thinking, geez, I do this. I spend a lot of money, not a lot of money, but I spend money doing this thing and the intention behind what I do is good and I can't control what a guest would say.
Yes.
And you're out of everything I've done, you picked up on this one thing and that's annoyed you enough to go and then write on this. And then I was very angry at the time. And then after a week or two later, I sort of think, well, that's obviously, I knew why she wrote it. Like I could tell why she wrote it. But it took me a while to get over it. But yeah, you got to catch yourself. I find myself sometimes going back to my natural reactions, but I do after a while, I'm a bit thicker with this sort of stuff, but I do come around eventually. It just takes me a lot more time, like a couple of weeks. To pull myself out of it and look at it objectively and apply what we've been saying into those situations. But yeah, I don't know how people at larger scales with a massive audience deal with all that sort of stuff because I find I find it very hard still because I think when you're trying to do something with good intentions, like, you know, the podcast is overall, it's a good thing. I'm not promoting anything. I'm not trying to sell courses or anything like that. It's basically just trying to document as many stories as possible that aren't someone's like is a sporting athlete or something talking.
Yeah.
I want real people to talk about it. So the reason why I do it is it's sort of a, it's just a passion thing on my way of giving back a little bit because I don't get really involved with the charities and all that sort of stuff.
Nice.
It's just not my thing. This is my version of it.
Nice. But,
it was an interesting thing. And I learned a little bit from it. It was a very small thing, but as you said, as you've been saying, it's not a problem at all. It wasn't a problem at all. It was just a reaction, but it was one of those things. Good but how about you now? How do you, in your business world, how do you, as you said, you've talked about it more, how you've a bit more introspective now, but as you said, it's made you more confident dealing with going to some bigger clients. What else has it given you in terms of in your business day?
Good question. I would say, more and more now, I'm probably getting open to sharing it. And like I said to you, I actually posted on LinkedIn after we said we were agreed to do this podcast. I think you saw the post where I said, you know, I'm getting to the point now where I'm open to sharing about this and things like this. It's actually opening up opportunities for me to help people outside of a transactional business space. So business has been a big part of my life up until this point. And it feels good to have, it feels so good to have this podcast on Friday, Joel, with you, where it's, I'm not on a business call and I'm not working with clients and I'm not selling something and I'm not, it's completely separate. And it's just this part of life where I've had experience that I can now start to add to people. So in any way, in some sort of way, like it helps me in business because it gives me an outlet from business where I can still help people and still, share value. But it doesn't have to be transactional. It can just be, this is just here to just give. I don't need anything back from this. I just want to give my time because I know that Darcy from 5 years ago would have loved to have listened to a podcast like this and had that guidance from other people who had been through it before. So
yeah, it's a great way to look at it. And I think the one thing you've got to, people need to realize is if you have an experience like yours, like it's not saying this is probably the wrong word, but this is the way I sort of frame it. It's selfish not telling anyone. Or keeping it to yourself because you've got so much learnings from a really hard event, which is not spoken about enough. You won't see it on mainstream TV. It's very hard to find content around this. So you're creating content that's very, very valuable. And that's, as you said, it's something that it will help other people. It doesn't matter about audience size or whatever, but it will help people. And it's something that lives there forever. And your story will be documented and then people can find it. And it's something that you just never know who it helps. You know, from doing this, my audience is not 10,000 downloads an episode, but I occasionally get messages from people saying, I listened to this, or I've never heard someone say about this before or whatever. And that's what it's about. You just never know the impact of it. And I think with everyone's stories, there's so many good stories out there people have, and they think, oh, I don't want to tell anyone because I'm scared of what someone might think. But it's very selfish because there's so much value in learning which people don't share enough, I think, because of it.
Yep. And that's how I think, you know, the intention is quite pure, is that if you had 10,000 downloads, awesome, but that's not why you're doing it. The best experiences I've had creating content is the content that I don't care who listens to it or who hears it. I just feel like this needs to come out. And if this helps one person, then awesome. I remember.
Spot on. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah. That's it. You're just there to just help one other person. If that helps, then great. That's how you know you're creating the right content, I think.
Yeah, it's a purposeful thing because people need purpose, right? So you can earn all the money in the world. I know a lot of rich people, and I can tell you what, a lot of them are not happy because their purpose is solely about money. There's nothing else. There's no community or anything like that. It's purely, you know, how much money can I make and then buy a possession and that's it. So for me, this gives me a little bit of purpose. Like you've got a family now, so I'd say, not speaking for you, but a large amount of your purpose would be your daughter. You know,
1,000%.
That's your priority. That's your purpose. You know, and it gives you a real, you know, you've got a real zest to life with that. And business is over here, but you know, I just think some people you just need a bit of a purpose. And sharing content or sharing stories like this, it can go a little bit to giving you a purpose. And that's what I find when I talk to guests. Like there's some guests, had a lady last week called Jenny, who's been through a lot in her life. And, you know, just giving someone a platform to share for an hour, even if it's not a, you know, 20,000, 10,000 download thing, you know, that it's helped that person a little bit. And they feel as though they're contributed, but also it feels like someone's listened, as you said, listened to them and gives a crap. And that's a really big thing.
Yeah. It's awesome, mate. Well said. Well said.
No worries, mate. Well, I've had you for more than an hour. So, beautiful. Thank you very much for your time and for sharing your story, Darcy. You're an absolute champion of a fella. And you know, in terms of your personality and enthusiasm, you haven't changed much since you were young. You're always very enthusiastic and very up and about bloke. And I'm really glad to hear about your family and your father and your brothers and sisters. And I hope you guys are all doing okay, because I've had a few guests on who've had a similar experience. And you know, it's an interesting thing. Like yours is a sudden, like as you said, you know, the way you spoke about it, but it's a sudden thing. Whereas with mine, it was a gradual thing.
Yes.
So I had the gradual thing, and I knew it was a physical thing. Whereas the way you've described it, so they're different scenarios. But it's if anyone can get anything, this, I think it's the time thing, as you said. I don't think there's any fix to the grief. You can go and talk to counselors and stuff, which might help. But I just think there's no other substitute for time, which is very, very true. With that, there's nothing else I think you can do to shortcut or rush the process. Yeah. I just think it's a time thing.
Well said.
No, thank you very much, Darcy. Appreciate it.
No, yeah, thanks, awesome. Mate. Thank you, mate. Cheers.
Thanks. Tees. Thanks, Darcy. Appreciate it, mate, for coming on.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. And if you do like what you hear, please make sure you leave a review online on Apple, Spotify, on the website. Reach out to me via livedexperiencepodcast.com if you want to share your story as well. Like Darcy, please do, and it can help someone. I got a lot out of that episode. You know, it's a very tragic thing what happened to the Darcy's family, and it's something that I'm really appreciative of him sharing the story, because even though we hear about the topic of suicide in the general, like, you know, someone's committed suicide, we don't hear about the family and what the family goes through really too much after that, right? So to hear it from his perspective and also him, from his family's perspective via him, I think you can really appreciate just the how much mental illness affects everyone. All right, it affects everyone in a family unit, especially friends, family as well. But just really big thank you to Darcy for sharing his story, and I really do appreciate him and what he did. He's a great fella, and he's got obviously a massive future, and he's just got a family he started. So I wish him all the best with that as well. So big thank you to everyone for listening to today. If you did enjoy it, please make sure you leave a review at livedexperiencepodcast.com.